Okay, this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and the privilege of reading Parshas Bo, which will give us insight into Yitzias Mitzrayim. So, of course, the Parsha begins with the servants of Paro hearing about the upcoming Makkah, and they turn to Paro and they say, Ad Masai Yes Alano Lemokesh, how long is this going to be a stumbling block for us? Right? How long are we going to have to deal with this? Right? And so the Or HaChaim HaKadosh asks, how was it that the Egyptians didn't kick the Jews out even when faced with personal annihilation? When you got that much already going on, the first six Makos wasn't enough, the seventh Makos wasn't enough, why, how long? They're already screaming about it. So Rav Gifter Zatzal noted that he really didn't understand the question of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, and that the test demonstrates that one who's godless will often follow paths that are useless until they totally destroy themselves. In other words, Rav Gifter says, like, you're asking a question, why do people do stupid things? They do stupid things because Yitzhar Nakfo, because the Yitzhar Hara makes us go ahead and do so. In other words, says Rav Gifter, the Yitzhar Hara doesn't use seichel, it doesn't act logically. So then, why exactly was the Or HaChaim HaKadosh asking a question? So Rav Gifter says that the only issue for the Or HaChaim HaKadosh was why not use another method within their own contorted logic to save themselves. For instance, Rav Gifter says, why didn't they choose to assassinate Moshe and Aaron? Why didn't they find some other way to go ahead and deal with their problem? They dug in deep. What was it that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh asks? What was it that led them to not proceed in order to be able to continue in their own shrira slave, with their own process? So then they go ahead and they have the Makkah of Arba, and the Arba comes in and it destroys the entire remaining economy of Egypt. And then Paro asks for Moshe Rabbeinu to get rid of the Makkah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a Ruach Kadimazah. God sends a strong wind from the west. It's a Ruach Yam Chazak Ma'od. It's a strong western wind which lifts up the Arba. And the question has to be asked, why does Hashem need a Ruach Chazak? Why does the wind have to be a strong one in order to be able to get rid of the Arba when he didn't need the strong wind in order to bring the Arba on? So the Sefer Ol Yitzchak explains that the Arba enjoyed the opportunity to take Hashem's vengeance to those who deserved it, and so they didn't need such a strong prompting from a Ruach Hazakah. However, once the Makkah was done, getting rid of the Arba required more effort, as the motivation to move out was no longer there. And so therefore, it needed a strong Ruach. The Sefer Otra Satorah brings down that based on this, we can see how excited we have to be when we come to Shul, or when we come to the Beis HaMedrash, and how we need that Ruach Yam Chazak Me'od in order to have that feeling when we're forced to leave it. It's like the Gemara points out in regard to Parshas Pa'aloscha, where the Torah uses the language that Vayisu Me'ar Hashem, and Chazal tell us it's Ketina Kabarech Mibeis HaSefer, which was not a good thing. And that's why the turning point of Parshas Pa'aloscha begins at that point in time, that they were so excited to run out. We need to have a different perspective when we get a chance to hang out with God, and whatever opportunities are there, that should be the source of excitement, as opposed to the opportunity to leave God's presence. Anyway, after this period in time, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Jews speaks to Paro about the impending Makas Bechoros, and thereafter the Jews are told about it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe and Aaron and offers them the first mitzvah, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chadashim. And the question has to be asked, what's the purpose of the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, and why was it the first one that was designated by Hashem for the entire nation? So I think I once heard from Rav Aaron Kanchalita from Yeshiva University, who explained that the first sign of emancipation, or what we call Chayrus, is the ability to lead ourselves based on our faith in Hashem. That's what Chayrus is about. It's also an understanding that creates a purpose in man's life as he comes to understand that the Torah needs us to carry out its laws. The Torah can't just exist in a vacuum, it needs us to make it life, right? We are needed to make Hachodesh Azalachem Rosh Chodesh. We need to make Rosh Chodesh, and we understand the ultimate cheirus, that of being able to recognize that we're under the Hashgacha of Hashem when we are involved in the creative process of making Rosh Chodesh. And so therefore, think about it. That's the ultimate cheirus olam. We and HaKadosh Baruch Hu partner. He needs us in order to make it Torah's Chaim. We are most alive when we are involved in that process, but we're also doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which makes us most alive. While we're on the subject, Hachodesh Hazel Lochem Rosh Chodeshim, Maran Hagon, Harav Asher, why Shalita explains that Bnei Yisrael are compared to the moon, because although the sun is large, it doesn't grow. The sun stays static, while the moon does not. The moon wanes and waxes. And what this represents is that it is not merely a question of how big a person is, but whether a person is a growing person. So Rav Asher added that the Maharsha writes in Masechta Sanhedrin that although HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Memait, the Yareach, that God diminished the moon is Sasimus Mechem Lasos Ritzon Konam. HaKadosh Baruch, the moon is happy and joyous to do the will of Hashem. And the Gemara tells us in Chulin that God said to the moon, go ahead and diminish yourself. That's a very difficult task. God didn't diminish the moon himself. Rather, he commanded the moon to diminish herself. And that's regarding that characteristic. That's what we say in Kiddush Levana, Sasim Usmeichem Lasas Ritzon Konam. They're glad and joyous to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We learn an important lesson from the moons. And sometimes we have to diminish or negate ourselves in order to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and still we do so happily. What a yesod in life. We spend so much time talking about self-promotion and self-importance and self-awareness. Part of this self-awareness is being aware that we're part of something bigger. That's one of the critical lessons that we learn as Bnei Yisrael because of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. It's one of the reasons why we're able to serve in that duality of Mispar and Shemos. We can be a Shem Davar, a individual on our own, but also at the same time have the responsibility and the awareness of being something greater. We get further into the Karban Pesach, speaking of something greater. We're told that the Karban Pesach is to be eaten bebayis echad yeyachel, that the Karban Pesach is supposed to be eaten in one home. And Rav Saratzkin Zatzal noted that the Karban Pesach had in its core the ability to transform the discorded family of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu had a discorded family, a family that had brothers who sold one another out, and now all of a sudden this Karban Pesach was going to be able to transform the family into an active tzibur. So you see, the Karban Pesach had that responsibility of being eaten as part of a community. And in order to make sure that nobody wimped out and took his stuff and went home, the Torah used the message of Bebayis Echad, that it has to be eaten in one home. There's no opportunity for you to say, I'm going home. I am not going home. Bebayis Echad Yeyachel. This is the antithesis of what it means to be a part of an individual involvement. We are not individuals, we are part of something bigger when we are part of being Yisrael. The Torah tells us, V'shamar Torah, Sachuka Azos Lemawada, Miyamim Yamima. We are told that we have a responsibility to remember this chok and guard it, Miyamim Yamima. So the question is to be, which chok? Hachuka Azos, which chok? Is this a reference to the tefillin, or is this a reference to the Karban Pesach? And do the days here refer to Yamim Yamima? Does that refer to a day as opposed to night? Or does it refer to all the time? The Rishonim seem to learn that the message here is a reference to a Din D'Rabbanan, not to wear tefillin at night. Now the Rishonim disagree. They say it refers to other things as well. So others say that the chok refers to Karban Pesach, right? And so therefore, this becomes a very big discussion among the Mefarshim in Masechta Eruvin. So I remember Shechta once used this discussion to highlight a very important principle mentioned by Rav Moshe Feinstein. What does one do if one doesn't have the ability to wear tefillin during actual daytime? The day starts way too early, and he has to be at work even before his Zman Tefillin. So Rav Shechta quoted to us from Rav Moshe, who explained that in Russia this was a problem, and that if Rav Moshe and his Darabon did not allow the people to put on Tefillin early with a bracha, they would come to be mezalzel in Tefillin. So, you know, if he told him put on the tefillin, but without a bracha, because it's only according to some of the Rishonim, that one can go ahead and do so, the people will wind up being mezalzel in the mitzvah of tefillin. And so, Rav Moshe allowed the bracha to be recited, assuming that the pshat in the pasuk was not speaking about a mitzvah de'oraisa miyamim yamima, that tefillin cannot be worn while it is still nighttime. Sometimes a posek has to look around and make those decisions. They realize what will lead to a non-zilzul. It's funny, sometimes compromise leads to a bigger zilzul. But these are certain instances where a posek has to realize that he has to consult and do what's best. It's not for every individual to make his own decisions in that regard. Torah tells us at the end of the parsha, V'haya l'cha l'os al yadcho l'zikaron b'nei necha, right? L'manti ha-Torah s'Hashem b'ficha. Right, it should go ahead and be a zikaron, a remembrance, right, in between your eyes. The Ramban says, and in a famous comment of the Ramban over here, the great open miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim are meant to teach us about the hidden miracles that happen all the time, and that whatever happens to a person is not so much a matter of teva, of nature whatsoever. And many assume that the Ramban is suggesting that there's no such thing as nature at all, but that's impossible, because we're aware that there is a function called teva, which David HaMelech calls a chok nasan v'lo yavor. We say it every single morning. And so what then is the Ramban's intention here when the Ramban talks about the fact that the open miracles teach us about the miracles that are hidden? So the late great Gaon Rav Moshe Twersky, Hashem Mimkom Damo Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explains that a nes, a miracle, means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is communicating with us directly and overtly. And so Rav Twersky Zatzal compared the difference between the supernatural great miracle system of Yetzias Mitzrayim versus the messages that Hashem sends us constantly within the context of nature. He said that's like the difference between Reuven walking through a door versus tapping very lightly on the outside of it. When Reuven walks right through the door, you see him. There he is. And unless someone's blind, he's right there in front of you. But when he's tapping lightly outside of the door, though it takes a subtle, refined sensitivity to pick up on it, many people could totally not notice the tapping at all, and others may notice it but not manage to identify that it's Reuven who's tapping on the door. And so in those situations, you need to really pay attention and listen with a very resonant ear to decipher the real implications, to know that the tapping is Reuven. Says the Ramban, even within Teva, it's not random. And even in Teva, it's not merely statistics. Even within the strict confines and boundaries of Hashem's guiding the world with natural law, Hashem is still sending us messages. We have to pay attention to discover what those messages are. And this, Rav Twersky said, was the concept of Schar V'Onesh. And through seeing it, when Hashem overtly makes us aware of His message, of His message-sending system, we come to the awareness of Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu. Finally, in the Haftorah, which of course comes from the book of Yirmiyahu, Rav Gideon Weitzman, Shalita, my dear friend and Rebbe, pointed out that there's a parallel between the Parsha and the Haftorah, in that in both, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a message to His people through the nations of the world. In this case, in both cases, in the Laning and in the Haftorah, it's a message to Mitzrayim that He is in charge of the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does have control of the world, and He can change nature if He needs to. And even if and when it appears that that's not the case, Hashem can decide in a moment to destroy a nation, and He'll do so with any nation that threatens us with annihilation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us that ability to become aware of it. May we all experience a Shabbat Shalom to all.